Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
So as some of you know, if not many of you know, that I am retiring from my leadership at Seattle Soto Zen as of our new teacher is already here. So I will be formally stepping down somewhere around the 1st of September. And so stepping away from teaching at least for a while. And from Sangha leadership. And so maybe because of that, or maybe because of how, you know, just where I am in life and practice, I've been thinking about the practice of being ordinary. And some of our regulars who have come here today may be tired of hearing me talk about this, but many of you haven't heard me, so this is great. So, I want to talk about three things. Being ordinary, seeing ourselves in others, and giving ourselves away. This is kind of a framework that I've developed for, you know, who knows how long I'll hold on to it, but it seems useful for me in this time of my life. And so, this teaching, like any other teaching, addresses kind of specific mental conditions that arise in one's mind, right? And it addresses some of the things that are arising in my mind, but also I think the things that I see arising in many practitioners' minds. And so an encouragement to let go of certain things in this be ordinary, see ourselves in others, and give ourselves away. It's like the two teachings, or the several teachings, one teaching, all beings are by nature Buddha. So this sort of reverential aspect to the term Buddha. And another teaching, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. So these are quite different, right? And it's not so important to try to blend them into some coherent verbal presentation of the practice, but just noting that each of the teachings kind of is designed to address certain mental conditions that create suffering. And so whenever you listen to a teaching, I think it's probably good to keep that in mind. And I think it's also good to, whatever teaching is presented, you know, try it on. Don't immediately say, well, that's not for me. I'm saying, well, maybe this is for me. Let me try this on. And so I think our sincere practice of opening to what is being presented is always helpful. The original title that I gave for this talk, Koshin always asks me for titles, and you know, I'm not used to doing that, so I make up some title and then the talk either fits or doesn't fit. But the original title was Heroism and Humility, meaning, of course, heroism and humility in spiritual practice. And it still fits for me. It's still an interesting thing to investigate. You know, as I look back on my career, when my practice or practice as a whole has seemed to tend toward the heroic, it seems to create problems. And you know, by heroic here, I mean, you know, this an aspiration to make some extraordinary effort to achieve some extraordinary result. And you know, in a way, our practice can be characterized that way. But so often, I think that this type of practice is accompanied by an aspiration to be an extraordinary person, you know, to become an extraordinary person through this practice. And I think that is particularly where we amplify our own suffering when we get into that mode. And I think it's kind of unavoidable because this, we are so deeply conditioned to construct an identity out of our experiences and out of our so-called successes and failures and accomplishments and accumulated virtues imagined. This is such a deeply ingrained habit that I think it's kind of unavoidable, but is worth paying attention to. When my practice and what I see in our practice as a whole tends toward humility or inspires humility, I feel like there's a groundedness and a pervading kindness and a durability that seems important to me and seems, dare I say, liberating, at least liberating from this tendency to construct an identity that is always under some kind of assault. So with that in mind, I want to talk more about each of these. Be ordinary, see ourselves in others, or in the other, both, and give ourselves away. So in the be ordinary column, I think first off is, well, we're all gonna die, right? And that's really ordinary. And I think sometimes, well, this is a major, what that means is an important investigation in this practice. But I don't think it means that we dwell in some state that is beyond birth and death. I think it means we live in a world that contains birth and death, and we participate in that. And already I'm getting tangled up in words, but I think where we live in this limited self, there is a central fact that we're going to grow old and die. And for me, that kind of helps us be a little more grounded. So again, I think we are, well, a little bit on the emptiness of self, a very little bit. It may be true, but we live for most of our waking life in this experience of being a separate, limited self. And I think our teaching of emptiness, our experience of emptiness, helps sort of ventilate this experience and helps us not take it too seriously. Yet, I think we always return to it. And again, the limited self that will die, and is really somewhat ordinary. The first question that Bodhidharma was asked by Emperor Wu in our famous story, maybe the most famous Zen story of all. And this one is not included in the major koan collections. It's always part of the backstory, but it's not in the case itself. I've endowed temples and authorized ordinations. What is my merit? And Bodhidharma replies, no merit. And I think this is a good place to spend some time. No merit. We could ask, well, what is the point of, you know, sitting here all day? No merit. What is the point of practicing for years? No merit. What is the result of doing a great service for humanity? I think we need to say no merit. It doesn't mean that we should just do anything. It doesn't mean that there aren't good things to do in the world. It doesn't mean that our practice does not have positive benefits for ourselves and others. But it means we don't accumulate anything. We don't get to sort of keep anything for our own little enhancement. And when we find ourselves doing that, it's good to be reminded of this teaching of no merit. So when I say ordinary, I don't mean the practice of just being any old thing, but I mean the practice of not stacking up accomplishments, not comparing ourselves to others. So, you know, we create this identity, and this identity of who we are seems to be, the whole point seems to be, well, how does that compare to others? Can I keep this identity in good enough shape so that I can favorably compare myself to, if not everyone, to, you know, a good portion? And I think when we describe it in those terms, we can't help but see that there's a lot of suffering there, and something that maybe we should avoid. And so part of the reason I like this term, or this phrase, be ordinary, is don't we immediately have some resistance to it? Don't we say, well, wait a minute, you know, I don't want to be ordinary. And perhaps that points to, you know, our process of this constructing this identity. And perhaps that's a big source of suffering. So I offer that. And to myself, because as a teacher, with all these forms, you know, you're not really encouraged to be ordinary. You're actually encouraged to be something else. And so, well, I should say, our fundamental teaching encourages us all to be ordinary without accumulating merit, I think. But our forms and our culture and our human tendencies encourage somebody sitting in this seat to think of themselves or think they should be maybe other than ordinary. When I hear the word enlightenment these days, I want to wash out my ears. I hope that's not offensive to anybody, but and again, it's where I am, right? Enlightenment is a beautiful thing. There is much to be said about an experience that takes us beyond the limitations of this small self. When I hear it these days, I hear it as something to be accomplished. And to me, that just sounds like suffering. So again, teachings are aimed at certain mental conditions. If the mental condition is that I'm aspiring to the accomplishment of something called enlightenment, then kind of forgetting about that word is perhaps helpful. I think the last time I was here, which was probably a year ago, for this occasion, I talked, I believe, about the whole world alive. You know, everything is alive, including us. So we are part of this one living world, universe, whatever. And to experience that is to go beyond some of the narrow confines that we live in. And I love stuff like this. You know, I think I was talking about the cottonwood seed and the breeze, and it's all alive, and we're all part of it. And this mystical experience, I think, I sort of see it that way, is a wonderful thing and a wonderful part of our practice. But I think the problem comes is when we start to identify with that, is like, this is who I am, this person who can have, who is larger than life, or at least who has this experience that they can draw on or is part of them. So again, it kind of becomes part of a constructed identity. We identify with, this is me, this is who I am. And, you know, what happens when we die, or what happens when life presents us with some different face? I think we need something more grounded to return to. So that's why I'm talking about being ordinary. We have these very striking and uplifting experiences sometimes in practice, and I think sometimes they get a little bit co-opted, and those of us who, well, on Sunday, last Sunday at our place, I spent a lot of time talking about how I think we all have this felt need for a kind of redemption, you know, and that this operates kind of under the surface in our lives. And, you know, I won't say everybody, but I'd say me and many others. And so that these powerful experiences in spiritual practice get kind of seen, momentarily we feel like we've been redeemed. And this is not really what we mean by liberation, I don't think. Being redeemed feels like, is, well, the way I'm using the word is, again, to transform who we are, who we think ourselves to be, so that we measure ourselves, so that when we measure ourselves against some standard, we come out on top. And this is, you know, it would be kind of funny if it weren't so tragic. Again, you may or may not have this condition, but I'm inviting us all to investigate. So our Zazen practice is really, I think, not about achieving something, but being intimate with the workings of our minds and arriving, well, perhaps at a place where it's okay just to be this, right? I'm inclined to want to try to explain everything, but it's so hard to explain everything, isn't it? And so I think I'll just keep moving along. Success and failure, you know, can can these really be just things that happen to us? The ordinary person is just moving along. Sometimes success happens, sometimes failure happens. Can we be that detached from the circumstances of our life? I think we can move in that direction. I think, you know, maybe this talk is inspiring to people. Maybe it's not, you know. Maybe it's not my turn today to be inspiring. Maybe it's my turn to be inspired by all of you. And that would be okay, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, you know, you may not want to take on that job, but I think that would be okay. And in this ordinariness, I think, you know, there's much to celebrate and enjoy. We have our own modest intelligence, our own modest creativity, you know, which flowers, our own modest loving nature, right? We have this capacity to love, which is so wonderful, and our own modest sense of humor. And so can we honor and celebrate without measuring? And when we get caught up in our old patterns, can we simply return to Zazen and perhaps being ordinary? Second thing that I'm mentioning today is see ourself in others, or see ourself in the other. And this, I think this is very simple, but it really is very profound. I think, you know, it's not that we don't do it, but I think we can remind ourselves to see ourselves in others. And again, there might be some resistance to this, right? I don't want to see myself in this person who I despise. I don't want to see myself in this activity that I find reprehensible. Am I really suggesting that we should? Well, I'm suggesting that we look for ourselves in others and in the other. I'm suggesting that that we see our own yearnings and frailties in the yearnings and frailties of others. And in doing this, begin to feel less isolated, less separate, right? So allowing ourselves to be ordinary and then seeing ourselves in others, which makes it maybe okay to be ordinary because we're more connected and we're actually begin to be open to a greater sense of love. I think we're enculturated, if that's a word. I think we're encouraged by this culture to see ourselves as unique. And surely there must be something good about that. Because each of us is a somewhat unique arising of karmic conditions. But this self that we carry along with us is not so unique, and it really shares much with everyone else, pretty much. And so to be less concerned with our own uniqueness, with the sense, because when we insist that we're unique, we might also insist that, well, nobody really gets me, nobody understands me, nobody sees me, and nobody really knows who I am. And there is this ache that we feel along these lines. But I think an insistence on our own uniqueness may not be helpful. And a practice of seeing ourselves in others may be might steer us towards something more durable and open. Shantideva has this whole thing about, you know, Shantideva, the Mahayana monk in, I mean, the 7th or 8th century AD. I think the Tibetans really study Shantideva. Do you guys study Shantideva?
Not a whole lot,
but
sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he has this thing that he says, called sometimes referred to the holy secret. And those desiring speedily to be a refuge for themselves and others should interchange the terms I and other, and thus embrace a sacred mystery. So exchanging self for other, or what I'm saying is just seeing ourself in others, beginning to consciously do that exercise. Just take it on, because it softens some of our firmly held boundaries. So this boundary, it can be more porous, it can be more transitory. It can be like, here's the boundary of the self one moment, and then it's something different, or it's not there, or we can be more light about the way we hold it. And again, in Zazen, we study this, I think, or we become intimate with what is this sense of a separate existence, and how do I not be so rigidly contained by it? Finally, my third point for today, give yourself away. And again, this is about addressing a certain mental condition. It doesn't mean be subservient or, you know, put yourself in thrall to somebody else, or, you know, have no ideas of your own. It doesn't mean any of that. But it means what we have in this moment, what we, particularly any merit or benefit or whatever we're holding on, we can give it away, right? Give it away to whoever or whatever is there to receive it. I don't know if this makes sense to you or not, but it's all, whatever we always have, there's always something here in my consciousness, in my sense of what I have, who I am, and I can always just give that away. It's kind of the antidote to holding on to it and constructing, and it requires us to do a little bit of a pivot, as does seeing ourselves and others. But this is more a complete pivot. It's like, not only do I not have to hold on to it, but I can give it away. I just give it away. You know, when I bow, I can give myself away. When I, in conversation, I can give myself away. In eating, I can give myself away. And the great thing is you don't have to have anything special. You don't have to be anything special. It doesn't matter what you have, who you are. Just, you can give it away. And that not only is good for others, but it's good for you. When I often forget about this. I often find myself far from this, but when I return to this sense of I can just give it away, it's like in my last moment I could just give it away. And that exercise, that practice is always available, right? Because, as I said, it doesn't matter what you have or who you think you are. But you can be assured that what you have in this moment has a value, because it's all has value, and you can give it away. And maybe we shouldn't even talk about value, but it's worth giving away. That's what I want to say. So we can just give ourselves to the world, give whatever we have to the world in this moment. So these are not, I don't think, accomplishments. I think they are practices that we can take wherever we go. I'm not sure where I'm going, but I'll be taking these at least for a while. Be ordinary. See yourselves and others. Give yourself away. I think they steer us away from a certain kind of suffering that we bring with us into spiritual practice. And I think they steer us toward an acceptance of our own limitations without being confined by them. And this, you know, that word love keeps coming up. Our capacity to open to the world and connect with others. For me, that's where I want practice to head, where I want practice to nourish me. So I thank you all for listening, and I hope that, well, I hope that we continue to walk this path.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Whether we know it or not.
Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.